We'll turn to the 139th Psalm. As I said, Brother Graber has heard my testimony. It's one of the things that that I did at Wauseon when he was still a member there. In fact, I remember what he said. Because he came to me after the service and he said, that's me. That's what happened to me. And the Lord hadn't even called him to preach yet, but I remember what he came and said to me is that, and anybody, I believe that, you know, that the Lord works in their life. You can look at it and see yourself, and when someone else gives their testimony of how the Lord saved their soul. And let's read this couple verses here in the 139th Psalm. I love this psalm. It's one of my favorite psalms that David wrote. He said there, he says, "O Lord," in verse 1, "Thou hast searched me and known me." And that was something that I didn't understand. I never understood the sovereignty of God. My parents were lost when I was born. And my dad worked in the shop. He moved down there and got a job at General Motors in Flint. And that's where he met my mom, and they were both lost. And but my dad had grown up in a Christian home, and my mother had not. And there was some Christian influence there in my dad's life. And whenever we went up north to Harrison, where my dad was born, we would go to church. But otherwise, we didn't go to church as children. I didn't go to church as a small boy. And but at the time I was about 7 or 8 years old, the Lord saved my dad. And all I can remember about it is things changed in our home. I mean, at 7 or 8 years old, you don't really grasp a whole lot other than, you know, you could see that there were some disagreements that my father had had with my mother over things. And I remember distinctly one of the things that happened was my relatives on my mom's side wanted to come over and have their normal drinking and partying. And I remember my dad having the discussion with my mom that wasn't going to happen anymore. And of course, I didn't understand it. I do now as I look back and remember it. But I remember my dad walking out on the porch and meeting my uncles out there as they brought their beer. And he basically stopped them on the porch and said, "You're welcome to come in, but you've got to leave your beer and everything in the car." And they just grabbed their beer and turned around and left, you know, and it never came back. My uncles never came over, and things changed. And then I remember seeing my dad, who used to drink and loved to have his cigars, changed in his life. And the thing that changed immediately is that we started going to church all the time. Ironically, one of the first places the Lord led my dad to church was Home Baptist Church in Mount Morris, Michigan. Isn't that strange? My dad doesn't go there. My dad's not a Baptist. But my dad prayed. I really believe that he prayed and the Lord saved his soul. And my uncle, who had actually been the one who had baptized him, and was not a Baptist himself, had told my dad, "Well, whenever I'm in Mount Morris, the church that I like to go to where I hear good preaching is at the Home Missionary Baptist Church." My uncle wasn't even a Baptist, but he knew good sound preaching. And so that's where my dad went. James Kissel was the pastor. Most of you probably might have heard that name, but Brother Kissel still alive, member at Faith Baptist Church in Paducah now, and he's probably 88 years old. I think he's a year older than my dad. And he was preaching there, and my dad felt led to actually be a part of that church. The Lord was leading him, and then when my dad went to talk to Brother Kissel, you know what Brother Kissel told him? He told my dad, he said, "Well, you need scriptural baptism, and you don't have scriptural baptism." And my dad didn't have scriptural baptism. He was baptized by my uncle. My uncle was an evangelical free preacher that did know all the gospel and preached the gospel to my dad and the church there in Harrison. And my mother, who was lost, told my dad that, well, she didn't understand. She says, "Well, that would be a slap in your brother-in-law's face. You know, that was my brother, his brother-in-law, if he were to be baptized again." And so my dad left that church. Left that church and went to a church that would accept any baptism. And that was the Free Methodist Church there in Mount Morris, Michigan. And that is the church that that I started going to as a child with my parents. And they did preach enough of the gospel there about Jesus Christ dying on the cross that my mother was saved. And about the time that my mother was saved, not long after that, they had, junior church, and they had things like that that went on, and a lot of activities for young people. And one of the things that they did was they would bring in sometimes you might want to call them an evangelist for children, in the junior church. And that's what they did one Sunday. And they had this man come in and preach to all the young people in the basement of the church. And I was 11 years old, and he began to talk about how even children would go to hell. And that's true. Those that are old enough to understand and know that they're sinners, and I believe that small children, that God doesn't hold them accountable for, and I believe that there is, people call about an age of accountability, but I do believe there's a point in time where a child reaches where they know that they've sinned and they're accountable for their sins. But anyway, they had preached this message, and I remember seeing other kids crying and going forward, and I thought, well, I don't want to go to hell. And so I was scared. And 11 years old, I went up there. They had what they called their altar call, and they had some little benches up there. And I got next down to some other kids, and I was crying because I was scared I was going to, go to hell. And this man, of course, got down there next to me and said, do you believe that Jesus Christ died on the cross? Well, yes, I did. I mean, I believe that. That's what I was told. I was told that, and I believe that. I mean, from the time I'd been going there for 3 years or so, or 4 years to church, I'd heard a lot about Jesus Christ dying on the cross. And then he asked me if I believed that, and he prayed and said, do you believe this and this? And I said, yes, I do. And he said, well, you're saved. You're born again. You're saved. And so I thought, well, that's good. That's what I wanted to hear. Somebody tell me that I was saved and I didn't have to worry about going to hell anymore. So 11 years old, I was basically, repeated sort of the sinner's prayer and was told I was saved. And then they set up a baptism for me. I never even was asked. And I remember anybody ever saying, you want to be baptized? It was just like, well, that's the next thing we need to do with all these little kids now is we'll have a baptism service. And so there was a baptism service, and I was dunked under some water in the Free Methodist Church, and had a false sense of security there, someone telling me that I was saved, and I wasn't. And it didn't take long, because there was no regeneration in my mind or my body for me to follow the way of being corrupt in my mind. I had grown up by a very corrupt child who lived next to me. And wasn't too long ago I looked him up on the internet, because he spent most of his life now in the Jackson prison. And his name was Randy Nelson, and I ran around with him a lot. And I, as a kid, and I grew up in the city of Mount Morris and in the city limits, and we had just kind of free reign. And back then, people didn't worry about their children. I would get up in the morning and could tell my mom in the summer how I'm going out to play, and my mom didn't worry about me. I mean, as long as I was home in bed at night, she didn't worry. I might eat at the neighbors, I might not. I might eat at my friends, or my friends might eat over with us. It was just that way. It was a different lifestyle that I grew up in than what today is, much of what, today you have to watch your children. There's a lot more things to be afraid of in this world which we live in. But there was danger out there. This Randy had got me at the age of 11 or 12 years old. I was stealing cigarettes out of cars, and we were smoking cigarettes, and it's amazing. I look at an 11-year-old now, and I think, how can they do something like that? But that was me. That was the corruptness of just influence of a kid my age, maybe just a year older than me, and let's just go and do this. Let's go do this. Let's go into the Slattery's pharmacy, and let's go steal some things, And so we did that. We'd go in there, and when they weren't looking, we'd steal some candy or some things like that, and just as small children. And that didn't turn into being totally corrupt in my mind and the things that I was involved in. And by the time I was 14 years old, I'd been in trouble with the law. I'd been arrested. And yet in my mind all the time, I'm thinking, I'm saved. I'm saved. But you know what I believed all the time in the Free Methodist Church was that you could lose your salvation. So I would pray and ask God to forgive me, and then I would go to bed at night thinking, well, I hope that I hope I've done enough good to outweigh the bad. And really, that's what, you know, religions that believe that you can keep yourself saved, that's really what they're always saying, is that you know, the Lord did his part, but now it's up to you to keep yourself saved. And that's what I grew up in those years believing. I believe that from the time I was 11 years old until the time I was almost 16 years old there. That was what all I knew, is that I could lose my salvation. Now I want to turn and read something here about that. It's just a good verse, that some verses in Galatians chapter 3. In Galatians 3, the Galatians, you know, there were some that crept into the church that were trying to bring them into bondage, into works again. And here in Galatians 3, it says, O foolish Galatians, in verse 1, who hath bewitched you that ye should not obey the truth? For whose eyes Jesus Christ hath been evidently set forth, crucified among you? This only would I learn of you, and that really means this only would I ask of you. I've got one question for you, is what he's saying. Received ye the Spirit by the works of the law or by the hearing of faith? He says, were you saved by hearing works of doing the works of the law? Were you saved by keeping the law? Or were you saved by the faith? And the obvious answer is we know that we're not saved by keeping the law. Even the Free Methodists know you're not saved by keeping the law. And most of those out there who, you know, are other religions who believe, you know, the Pentecostals and all these others that believe you can lose your salvation, know that you're not saved by keeping the law. And he says, were you saved by the works of the law or by the hearing of faith? Well, the obvious answer is, no, I was by faith. Well, then he says, are you so foolish then? Are you so foolish, having begun in the Spirit, you are now made perfect by the flesh? Are you so foolish that you think that you've begun, that God saved you by faith, but yet now you're kept perfect by keeping the law, by your works? But you see, that's exactly what they tell you. And it wasn't until that the providence of God, and I can tell you that I believe, I look back at what David said here in the 139th Psalm, and he said there, you know, that Thou knowest my down sitting and my uprising. Thou standest my thought afar off. Thou compassest my path and my lying down, acquainted with all my ways. David understood that God had beset him. He said, Thou hast beset me behind and before, and laid thine hand upon me. I find it very interesting that in my life, my dad went to Flint, Michigan from Harrison or Clare area. Got a job there, and then met my mother there, and they married. And the very year that I was born, the very year, 1956, that I was born, within the year of my birth, he moved to Mount Morris, Michigan. Now I'll tell you, that's the providence of God. He moved from Flint out to a house in Mount Morris, and I believe that was all for me to go to Mount Morris Schools, where I would meet Debbie Bixby, who would share some truth of the Word of God with me. I'll tell you, I believe it so now when I look at it, Thou hast laid thy hand upon me, beset me behind and before, that within a year of me leaving the home and getting married and leaving that home, my dad sold it and moved away. So the only time that my dad was in Mount Morris, Michigan, were the 18 years of my life. That was the only time my dad was there. The 18 years of my life. During which time, is even as a small boy, I visited Home Baptist Church. I remember Nikki's mother, Melody, her mother, Cherry Hammerline, being my Sunday school teacher for a short period of time while we visited there. But anyway, by the providence of God and me being an average, typical ninth grade boy in study hall, I was interested in girls. You know, that's that, you get that point where, you know, you just start looking around and your buddies aren't as important to you anymore. And they study at study hall, they try and make people actually study. They were trying to put two people or three people or no more than four at an 8-foot table. We got these 8-foot tables out there, and you can imagine, you know, you put basically what the study hall teacher was trying to do is put one boy here and maybe another boy there and maybe two girls down there at the other end or something. And so there was quite a distance. And I remember Debbie Bixby was sitting at the other end down there, and so I kind of slid my chair down, you know, where I could get within talking range to her, because I didn't want to talk to this kid across from me. And I got her in trouble, and I got in trouble too with this, you know, the study hall teacher, you know. And I actually got paddled for it, but I think he gave her a pass out there. I don't think she actually got paddled for talking to me. But that was Gary Jean, and he was the study hall teacher. Anyway, but I talked to her, and she was talking to me about different things and asked me if she said, are you saved? She flat out asked me, are you saved? And I'm 15 years old, and I'm thinking in my mind, I'm thinking, well, I don't know. And because the very first thing I thought in my mind is I knew what I'd been doing last night. And I thought, I'm probably lost right now. And I even told her, I said, well, I don't really know. I might be. And that baffled her, because she had only grown up in the truth, knowing that precious truth of that God, when he saves you, what the word means is saved. You're saved. You know, that you are saved. What does the word saved mean? I mean, it doesn't mean that God has just reached over the cliff, you know, and got a hold of you and said, okay, I'm hanging on to you now, but if you sin too much, boop, I'm going to let you go. Saved means that you've been rescued from, you're safe. But I didn't understand that. And she just simply said to me, well, what do you mean if you're saved, you're saved. You know, if you're saved, you're always saved. You never can be lost again. And I thought, I never heard that. I thought, well, that's interesting. And of course, my fleshly instinct right away was, I like that religion. Because I don't have to worry. I mean, I want to find out more about this, because if that's true, then I don't have to worry about all these sins I'm doing. That's really that was the deep, depraved nature in my mind thought, first of all, I need to find out more about this, because I'm always worried about whether I'm saved or not because of my sins. And so I wanted to find out more, and through the providence of God, and she invited me to go to visit her church and to go to Home Missionary Baptist Church. And I went there, and I'll be honest with you, I didn't go there to find out anything really, other than my fleshly nature was, I'm going to go there and see how far I can get with this girl. And that was my depraved thinking. I'm going to go there and just... And I felt like when I walked into that church, they ought to be thankful to have someone like me come even visit. And I walked in and sat kind of back over on this side with her. And Don Titus began to preach. All the conversations that we had had in study hall, it was like he had it line by line by line notes that he had taken. And it was like to me that there was nobody else in that building but me and Don Titus. I don't even know if he ever looked over here to this side of the church. He might as well have just went like this the whole time. That's how I felt. So much so that by the time he got done preaching, I was so angry and so mad, I wanted to walk out, I wanted to leave, I wanted to get out of there. That's all I could think is, I need to leave. This is horrible. This man knows everything about me. She has told him everything. I got up and I looked at her and I said, you told him everything. And that's how I felt. And I left mad. Just like old Naaman in the Old Testament when they said, go wash in the, you know, this dirty. He left angry. It wasn't the way he thought it should be. And I left mad and I thought, I'm never going back there. That's how I felt. Thought, that girl betrayed me. She told that preacher everything. And of course, she's telling me, I never said nothing. I never told him anything. You know, I never told him about our conversations. But it was like he knew everything. And of course, he didn't. but God does. And the Lord was working and speaking to my heart. And for some reason, the Lord impressed upon me to go back. To go back and hear more. And more. And through the preaching, it was one day in the service, the Lord, the Holy Spirit, just spoke to my heart so clearly and just said, "You're lost. You're lost. You're a sinner. You're not a child of God. You're not one of mine." And I wanted to go forward right then and just cry out and scream, "I don't know what to do. I'm lost. I'm lost." And I didn't know. But I went home and laid there in my bed. And I knew that I couldn't go to sleep. Because I thought, if I die, I know I'm going to hell. And I got down on my knees next to my bed. And I began to just say, "Lord," I didn't even really know what to pray. Didn't have a good prayer. Wasn't any repeated after me type prayer. I just got down and I began to say, "Lord, I'm sorry. Forgive me." And I began to try and remember everything. And I knew I couldn't remember them all. There'd been way too many sins in my life already by the time I was 15 years old, 16 years old, to remember them all. But I remembered the one thing that I said is I said, "Lord, I'm going to just stay here on my knees until you make me to know that I'm your child, that I'm saved." And it was when I said those words that he just came across his spirit and said, "You're mine. You're my child." And I knew from that moment on that I was saved and I was born again. I didn't understand anything. I didn't really understand. If someone would have said to me, "Do you know the doctrines of grace?" I would have said, "What?" I don't have any idea what the doctrines of grace were. I'd been in a church that basically just taught a bunch of Sunday school stories. And I knew them very well. And I still know most of those stories very well. And I believe the Lord even used that. I believe our God is so sovereign, He used all those Sunday school teachers to teach me stories that would help me as a preacher today. I know a lot of the Old Testament stories very well because I can still remember the flannel graphs and the pictures and all that. It was very interesting to me as a child. It was like, sitting down and reading Mother Goose. "Did you tell me about it?" That was good stuff. But now I went to church with a different desire. You take a newborn babe, and when they're hungry, you put that bottle in there and they want that. Well, that was me now. I didn't want to go back there where I went. I wanted to go where the Lord spoke to my heart, where I knew there was something different. And I didn't even understand it. I didn't understand what was different there, other than I knew that there is where God spoke to me. I still got my first Bible. I just unpacked it and put it on my shelf that my wife bought for me. She bought me a Bible. She wasn't my wife then, but she's kind of my friend, And she bought me a Bible. It's all got black electrical tape holding it all together and everything else because I kept it so long. Used it as long as I could. But I just started scribbling all over it. Scribbling everything that, it was just like every time Don Titus got up to preach, it was like, I'm writing this down. This is good. This is good. I understand this. In scripture that I had memorized as a 10-year-old and an 11-year-old and a 12-year-old in the Free Methodist Church, I'd go to these competitions that they had, and I'd memorize chapters and sections, and I could stand up there just as good as could be and recite them word by word, and you couldn't miss a "the" or an "and" or a "of" or anything if you wanted to win the competition, because I wanted to be the best. That was me. I could do that, but it meant nothing to me. I had memorized Ephesians chapter 2, and it meant nothing to me. I'd memorized the 91st Psalm, and it meant nothing to me. I'd memorized all these chapters. They meant nothing. They were just words that I could get up there and repeat. But now, Don Titus would turn to Ephesians chapter 2 and he would read, "For by grace are ye saved through faith. And that is not of yourselves." And I'm going, wow! It's a gift of God. And I'm thinking, I understand that now. It was like God was opening my understanding to truth. And that's why I've kept that Bible, is because I look back at it and I see all those things and it reminds me of how God was just opening my eyes to things. And I remember thinking, she'd given me that Bible and I had that Bible and of course, the Lord had saved me and something was different in my life. I remember right after the Lord had saved me, coming out to, you know, at the high school and getting my lunch tray and walking out after the Lord saved me and coming out with my food and looking at all the round tables there in the big school for lunch and looking over there at my group, you know. That's where I belong. That's where I sit with those guys. And immediately the Lord said, "You don't belong over there anymore." You know, and I mean, it's just, you know, you could look at the group, you know, and it was just interesting how, you know, 300 and it was probably more than that, because there was 270 in our graduating class. There's probably at lunch, you know, close to 800, maybe, I don't know, maybe not 800, probably 600 at least in the lunchroom, you know. And a lot of people in there anyway. And might not have been that many because we had two lunches. But there was a lot of, at least 300 or 400 in there of tables. Round tables of kids. You know. So you had your groups. You had your cliques. Your niches. You know, you had your jocks. You had your popular girls. You had your dope smokers. You know. And you had your people that were tweeners. That was me. You know, kind of had parents that were kind of morally good, and you couldn't dare go over there with the dopers and sit with them. You kind of wanted to be cool, like you wanted to have long hair, you know, look a little like a hippie, because that's what I did. I had long hair, you know, and wanted to look like, you know, like I was kind of cool. But when I came out with that lunch tray, and I looked at my group, the tweeners, you know. And I thought, I don't belong there. I know I don't belong with the dopers. But I don't belong with the tweeners. And I looked around and I thought, there's that table of those people over there, the girls all wear dresses. And that's where Debbie Bixby sits. She sits with them. And she sits with those other guys that are kind of weird. That's where I'm going. I took my tray and I sat down over there. And I remember the guys are looking at the tweener table. They're looking at me like, "Wait, where's Mark going? You know, he's going the wrong way. He's not going to go sit with us." And I just looked over at a couple of them and I said, "Hey, come on over here." You know. Then a couple of them tried it. They listened to the conversation for a while and they thought, "This ain't us. We're going back over there." You know. But you see, the Lord changed. It's just like I said in the message the other night. Harry Hill, he said, the Lord changes your hitching posts. The Lord changes your life. He changes where you feel like you belong, where you feel like you should be. Where you feel like you should fit in. God changed that desire in my heart. Desire to hear the Word of God. Desire to read it, to know it, to understand it. And I remember that I was so hungry for learning the truths of the Word of God that I went to Don Titus one time and I hadn't been saved very long. And I walked to him up the back of the church and I just said, "I just need to know. I need to know everything." And he just looked at me and he says, "What do you mean?" I said, "I don't know nothing. I've been in church since I can remember now." And I said, "I don't know anything." I said, "It's just like every time I come here, I'm finding out all this stuff that I should have known. And I don't know anything. And I want to know it all right now." And he just kind of smiled and he said, "You just keep coming and listen to the preaching." And I said, "I can't wait." I was that hungry. I just said, "I can't wait for every service to find out more about what I should and should not be doing. About serving the Lord." And he finally just looked at me and he says, "Well, you need to get a haircut." Of course, I still had kind of long hair. And I went, "Oh, well, yeah, that's kind of bold." you know, hurt my feelings a little bit. Sunday morning, you know, I left there and I thought, I do need a haircut. I ought to look like a Christian. I shouldn't look like them dope smokers. I shouldn't even look, resemble them. I drove all around. I didn't realize in Genesee County that there's not a barber open. That the Barber Association wasn't open on Sundays, and that they just made it, you know, there was a rule, barbers, you know. I mean, when I grew up, there was hardly anything open on Sundays as a kid. I mean, you could find, there was like one gas station in town. There was no stores, there was no grocery stores or anything. People didn't shop on Sunday. I drove all around, and finally I drove on to Flint, and I found a beauty shop. And I went in there, and I just said, cut it off. The girls looked at me and said, what do you want to do? I said, just cut it off. I just want to look like a, you know, making me look like an old man's haircut, you know. Just cut it off. And so they cut it off and cut my hair, and I combed it, and I looked in the mirror, and I thought, boy, I look weird. Because I was used to having that hair that I would stand in front of the mirror. You know, boy, I look like, you know, I'm cool. And I come back Sunday night, you know, and I walked in, and I'm like, got my hair cut. And I thought my pastor would say, boy, you look like a fine young man. Brother Tyus looked at me and he goes, you got your hair cut on Sunday? And I said, I didn't know anything to think about that I shouldn't have done on Sunday. And so, you know, all my pride that was lifted up with just what I had done, just went poof. But, you know, I didn't get angry at him. I wasn't mad because he was telling me the truth of everything. I shouldn't have done it. I mean, I could have waited a day. But I had to just, you know, run around and get it done. But I wanted to. The thing was, I wanted the desire to be like other Christians. I wanted a desire to please God. And I knew that I wasn't pleasing to Him. Well, of course, most of you figured out that girl in Sunday study hall now is my wife. And I could go into all that kind of stuff. We don't have time to go into all that. And the girls would probably love hearing all that kind of stuff. But you know, after she proposed to me, and she did ask me out first, so I mean, she won't admit that either. But we were married at a very young age. But I'll tell you, there's a lot of you know, people that think it's wrong to marry young. We were both 18 years old. But we were both very mature at 18 years old. 19 years old, I was an insurance adjuster and had a lot of responsibility. And we bought our first home by the time we were 21. We were very responsible young people. But I remember, I'll share this with you, that I remember before we got married, I want to tell you about my baptism. Because, you know, I'd grown up in this church and now the Lord had saved my soul and I had... And I came to this point where I knew I didn't have scriptural baptism. And I went forward and then I talked to Brother Tyus and I said, I want you to know, Lord, save me. I said, I went there and I said, Lord, save my soul, you know. And he says, well, he says, you know what the Lord would have you to do. The Lord would have you to follow him in baptism. You don't have scriptural baptism and you need to be baptized. And I said, you don't understand. My dad is never going to accept that. He was here before, and he rejected that, and he left this, and he turned his back on it because he understands that. My dad's not going to accept that, you know. And I think, you know, you think in your mind, oh, you know, I'm still living at home. I'm just 17 years old now, you know. But, you know, the Lord just wouldn't leave me alone on that. Wouldn't leave me alone on it. I tried running from it. I tried leaving home church and going to another place and even tried doing other things, and the Lord just wouldn't leave me alone. And it was one point in time that I went to Brother Tyus and I said, I want to be baptized. I said, you just pray that the Lord will make it acceptable with my parents. I didn't want to have problems. I'd had problems with my parents for years. As a bad, unruly teenager, I had problems with my parents because I didn't honor them and I didn't do what was right and I destroyed the trust because they had caught me in so many lies and different things and I thought this is going to be hard now for them to accept that I'm saved when I have told them I was saved and for them to understand that I need scriptural baptism, and I didn't even understand it myself, what scriptural baptism. I just knew that I needed to be baptized and a member of that church. The Lord pressed upon me, and so I walked in the door. And I remember they were both sitting at the kitchen table. It was just like God had placed them there for me. And I walked in the back door, and I just said as humbly and as sincerely as I could, I said, I'm going to be baptized next Sunday at Home Missionary Baptist Church, and I would love it if you guys could come to my baptism. And they both looked at me, and they looked at each other and said, we'll be there. And that was it. And I thought it was going to be a, how can you do this thing? And, you know, how can you, you know, believe this? And how can you reject, you know, your religion and your baptism and all this? And, you know, and children grow up in homes and they think that God can't work something out, and He can work anything out. And, of course, the Lord worked all that out. My wife and I were married, and God has blessed our lives, gave us two wonderful children, and I had my plans. You know, and that's what all men do. I'm going to tear down my barns and build bigger barns, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that. And after a certain amount of years, the Lord saved our son. And I remember just rejoicing in that fact. And I was driving on US 10 in Midland, towards Midland. And I was just in my car. You know, sometimes I get by myself in my car and just start crying and rejoicing over the Lord. You know, when no one can see you as a man, just sit there and just start weeping and let it go, you know. And I was just thanking God for everything. Thanking God for my wife and my children and the way He'd blessed me and the truth that He'd shown me. And I finally understood, you know, some of these things, you know, that in the Bible that I'd never understood. And He put me in His church, and I just was rejoicing over that fact, thinking, oh, Lord, You've been so gracious to me. You've saved my unworthy soul, and You've put me in this church. And I'm driving down the road with You've saved my son. And it was like the Lord said, I've done this for a purpose. And I knew the purpose, that You might preach these truths. Oh, I said, no, that's going against everything I got planned here. And I can't do that. I mean, I couldn't give a speech. We had speech class in high school, and I couldn't do it. I'd get up there in front, and I'd just fumble over everything, and I didn't want to stand in front of people. I was nervous. I'd sweat. I'd do anything I could to get out of giving a presentation or a speech. And I thought, I can't preach. I can't even get in front of people. How can I do this? And I argued with God. And I just remember pounding on my steering wheel, driving on the road, saying, I can't do this. And when I said that, I remember great fear coming across my mind. And I began to pray and ask God and said, Lord, whatever You do, do it to me. Don't touch my wife. Don't hurt my children. But if You're going to do anything out of Your anger, do it to me. And really what I was hoping for is just kill me, because I can't preach. That's really what my mind was saying. Lord, if this is what it's got to be, just kill me. Take me home, because I can't preach. Well, I'll tell you what. When you pray a prayer like that, and within 5 miles of where you prayed that prayer, you find yourself unable to move your legs and in a hospital. 1 month later, your mind will go back to that prayer. Because that's what happened to me. I'm 30 years old, and I blew out a disc in my back so bad that half my spine was cut in two. I couldn't move either leg. And all I was doing was just getting out of the car. People say, what did you do? I'm just getting out of my car. But the Lord can strike you down. He can lay you in a hospital bed, and He can make you think. Make you think about everything that you've said and you've done. But you know, in my mind, I had my plans. I remember trying to think, I'm tired of this insurance claims business. I'm going to become an insurance agent. And pretty much everything I've ever tried to do in my life, I've been successful at. If I put my mind to it, I didn't care if it was building a car, if it was painting a car, if it was building something with my hands. If I didn't know how to do it, I was going to figure out how to do it, and I'll get it done. Usually fast, because that's me. I'll just get it done. And I took all these exams, and I passed the insurance exam the very first time in the state of Michigan, and a lot of people take it two or three times before they pass it. I studied for it, took a class for it. I went down there and took it, got my life and health and annuities and all that very difficult licensing. I got it passed and everything. And then this guy took this aptitude test, and he came to me, and he goes, "Oh, you are just cut out for this. You're made for this. Look at how you scored on this. You did great. You did good." And I'm like, "Yeah, okay, that's me. I'm good." And I just went into that insurance business, and I couldn't do it. It's the biggest flop there ever was. Because in my mind all the time, the Lord was saying, "What are you doing? This isn't the direction." And finally, I got with Larry Eaton, who I was working with, and I pulled into his driveway with him, and I just said, "Larry, we got to talk." And I couldn't tell him what it was, but I just said, "Larry, the Lord ain't going to let me do this." I said, "I can't explain it to you, but the Lord's just not going to let me do this." And he just nodded and said, "Okay, I understand." And I think he sort of understood that the Lord was pulling me in a different direction, but it wasn't going to be in the insurance sales business. And I fought with it, and I struggled with it for years. For 8 years, this call to preach. I just did everything I could to run from it. Didn't want to do that. And there came a day that I was sitting in the house, and one day, and I know that I was listening to a message that Don Titus preached, and I was in the front room in my chair, and he was preaching about the Lord's church, and I began to just sit there and weep. And I thought, first thing I thought was, I gotta hide. I don't want my wife to see me crying. I'm just sitting here bawling. And I thought, I don't want the kids to see me or my wife to see me. And I thought, I got to get up and run and hide. I got to go get in a room somewhere and hide. I don't want my wife to see me sitting here bawling. Well, I couldn't get out of the chair. I was just like, "Oh, I can't move. I can't move." And she finally walks around and she sees me sitting there, and I'm like, she's like, "What's wrong?" I'm like, I couldn't tell her. I didn't want to tell her. I don't want to say the Lord's calling me to preach, because it's an admission. It's an admission to what I don't want to admit to. And finally, she just looked at me and she just, "Well, you need to go talk to your pastor." She's getting me out and putting my coat on and shoving me out the door. And I'm thinking, this is the last thing I want to do is talk to him. But I did. I got in my car and I'm driving and I'm crying and I'm weeping and I'm going. And I finally get to the church and I go in and I sit in the back pew of the dark church building all by myself. And I'm sitting there. And I'm thinking, just leave. I don't want to talk to him about this. And of course, he comes and he just sits down next to me. And he says, "Mark, you know you're saved." I said, "Yeah, I know I'm saved." He says, "So what's the problem?" And I just shook my head and I said, "I can't tell you." And he says, "Lord, calling you to preach, right?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Well..." He says, "I can tell you what I tell every young man. You do everything you can to avoid it. If you can avoid it, the Lord never called you." And so I thought, boy, that's good advice. Me, I was happy. I left there thinking, we'll just avoid this. Couldn't avoid it. Went several years. Sometimes at conferences, I remember one time at a conference down at Elkton, Kentucky, I was sitting there on the front, I don't know what I was doing on the front pew. You know, when you're avoiding something, you shouldn't be on the front pew. Get in the back, you know. I'm on the front pew, and Eugene Clark's sitting next to me, and Harold Harvey gets up, and he sings a song. Harold Harvey, you know, he's not the world famous singer, but he got up there and he just starts singing this song. And I'm just sitting there thinking, oh man, I'm starting to bawl like Bruce and Clyde Hancock, you know. And I'm thinking, I got to get out of here or something. These preachers are going to think I've lost my mind. But you know, when the Lord gets a hold of you, sometimes that's what happens. There's a time to weep, time to mourn, there's a time to rejoice. But Mother's Day of 1994, I couldn't run anymore. I don't even remember what the message was. You know, I remember what Don Titus preached. I just remember sitting over on that side over there where we always sat as my family. I sat over there and I sat in the end, and he began to preach, and all I could think is just get this message over with. So, and I thought, I can't take it anymore. It's a surrender. That's why they call it surrendering, because it is a battle. It is a battle that goes on and never ends. Because most preachers want to quit. They want to give up. And it's a surrender, constantly. It's a battle. It's a surrendering to the will of God. And I surrendered to preach. I walked forward and told my pastor, and told him that I was done. And I asked the church to forgive me, because I felt like I had been aching in the church, sin in the camp. Running from the Lord all the time and not submitting to His will to me was hurting the church too. And it is. When you're not right with God, you're part of the church and you're hurting the church. And that was the first thing I felt like I had to do, was ask the church for forgiveness too, for not submitting to the will of God. The Lord has been good to us. We've had, I'll tell you, the most blessing things I've had in my life has been when I've submitted to the Lord. But I was amazed at how quickly the attacks of the devil came. Because within just a few months of surrendering to preach, one of the biggest blows in my life came to me. It had been told to me. And it just knocked me down. It knocked me down so hard that I remember calling my pastor and saying, "Can you meet me at the church?" And I came and talked to him and shared to him what I had found out. And it was with my dad. Some past history that just hurt me tremendously. And the devil used that to try and keep me and discourage me. And I knew that. I knew that what he had done is like, okay, you've done this, submitted, I'm gonna knock you down. And he'll come at you many, many different ways. Our daughter became very, very ill. Mental illness is a horrible thing. You wouldn't know it to look at her today, and she'd tell you that. She graduated at Christian school, valedictorian of her class. Very, very smart. And for some reason, she became so ill that doctors told us she'll never be normal again. Your daughter has OCD so bad that she'll never recover. And through the illness, she tried to kill herself. And we had times where in our own home that Mark would have to sleep at her door or at our door so we could get a night's rest, because things were so chaotic and so bad. So the devil was throwing everything he could at us. Deb's mom had a stroke. Had several strokes, had to move in with us. And I'll be honest with you, there was a point in time where I know she was so depressed, my wife was, she couldn't get out of bed. And I thought, Lord, I'd just soon die. I'd just soon die. But the Lord, if we could just wait on the Lord, and we couldn't visualize where our daughter would be today. She's not in the Lord's church. But she's a wonderful mother. She has two wonderful children. She has a husband that loves her and takes care of her. And most of you know my son and what God has done with him. Our God is great. Look with me and we'll close here just a moment back at the 139th Psalm. David said in verse 4, he said, "Lo, there's not a word in my tongue, O Lord, but thou knowest it altogether. Thou hast beset me behind and before and laid thine hand upon me." You know, I had that be born. Nothing could happen to my dad. As I said, Dad, God brought my father to Flint, Michigan for me. For me. And then he comes to this verse here in 39, and he says, "Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It's high. I cannot attain unto it." When you begin to realize all that God works out in your life, and I begin to look back and see how this girl who lived over off on Emerson Street in Flint, and how my aunt and uncle had a house over on Dartmouth, and that's where my dad stayed and went to a football game and met my mom, and they were married, and then the year I was born, they moved to Mount Morris, Michigan, and they were there for 18 years, and then after I moved out, they sold the house and moved away, and I look back and see that the only time that my dad was there was for me to grow up around a place where I would hear the gospel. And I begin to look at it, and I fall like David, and I begin to look back and see how God has beset me behind and before and worked everything out in my life. And then David said, "Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It's high. I can't attain into it. I can't even grasp how God has worked everything out." And then he goes on, and he begins to say how everything in his life. And then he says in verse 15... verse 13, "Thou hast possessed my reins, thou hast covered me in my mother's womb." I couldn't have been aborted, or I couldn't have died. There was no legal abortion when I was born, but there was nothing that could happen to me even in the womb. She couldn't miscarry me. God was making certain of that I would not only have a physical birth, but that one day he had planned to save me in 1973. "Thou hast possessed my reins and covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are thy works, and my soul knoweth right well." And then verse 15, "My substance was not hid from thee when I was made in secret and curiously wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. Thine eyes did see my substance, yet being unperfect. And in thy book all my members were written, which in continuance were fashioned when as yet there was none of them." You know what? God has written his book and his plan, and his will is already all, you know, this is the will of God concerning me. Everything about how I am right to this point. You know, God knew that I would be standing here. I would be, you know, weigh 100 and, you know, 200 and some odd pounds and over, you know, weight, and I'd have gray hair, and everything about me was written in his book before I was ever yet born. Because we have a sovereign God that knows all things, our thoughts. I mean, he knew everything about me. And when David got to that point, he wrote this wonderful 139th Psalm, and he just said, "It's high. It's beyond my comprehension or understanding. It's high. I can't attain unto it." How great our God is. And when I think about it, I love giving my testimony, because really, it's just bragging on our God and how great he is. Look at me briefly over to in Ephesians chapter 1. Ephesians chapter 1, verse 4, "According as he hath chosen us in him before the foundation of the world," before God ever created this world, he chose me. He chose me in Jesus Christ. That's a love that we can't begin to understand. "Having predestinated us into the adoption of children by Jesus Christ to himself, according to the good pleasure of his will." Not my will, but his will. Thank you for the opportunity.